Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. It's the dawning of a new season, so we have so much to talk about, including a slate of real live games that count, team and player previews, a conversation with veteran lacrosse official Brian Abbott about rules and officiating, and much, much more. So let's jump right in. Dixie, let's get it. What's good, my man?
It is good to hear the whip. That means that the D-Fly Dixie podcast is back. And that means we get to talk about lacrosse, and it's an exciting day.
Yeah, it really is. And what have we been doing this podcast? Maybe like 5-6 years together, at least. Seems longer because of COVID and all this other nonsense.
Yeah, I think we're approaching that threshold.
But we've been doing this so long that there's a new wrinkle to it. You actually have a son playing college lacrosse this year. As well as another one who is a junior in high school, but he knows where his college destination is going to be. So this is like a whole new angle that you can talk about. Not only are you a Big Ten analyst and commentator and analyst and writer at Inside Lacrosse, but you played at the Hopkins back in the old days, and you're also a lacrosse official, but now you're also a LAX dad, a college lacrosse dad. So you're seeing this game at so many different angles and perspectives that it's going to be fun, even more fun than usual, or maybe worse. I'm not sure, to talk to you throughout every week throughout the season about college lacrosse. So I'm excited, Dix, to be back in the saddle with you for another season.
It's good to see you. Always good to be with you. Yeah, my older son, Matt, is a freshman at Loyola University in Maryland, playing for the Greyhounds. Loves it. Loves the school. Loves his classmates, teammates, coaches, really enjoying himself. And then my younger son, Owen, junior at Loyola Blakefield High School, where Matt graduated from last year, had the privilege of verbally committing to the University of North Carolina this past October. You know, it's great. I was on Ray Carnicelli's Jacksonville Gentleman.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
Longtime podcast fan. Was on his radio show this past weekend.
Friend of the pod.
Big time friend of the pod. Couple things. One, when you're a guest on a show, you really are just kind of focused on them introducing you and you coming on and having a discussion. I didn't even realize it, but he's like, hey, when's the podcast coming back? And I was like, oh, you know, we'll be back next week on Friday. First one drops. He's like, did you like your walk-up music? And I was like, oh, he goes, yeah, it was the theme from Kingdom. So it was the Ryan Wheeler walk-up music that he played.
Johnny Cash.
I was like, I love that show. I miss it so much. He goes, I know. You guys talk about it all the time on a podcast. So that's just a real treat when you have, you know, support like that, fans like that. I love doing Ray's radio show. He does such a great job. It's broadcasting for Flagler. It's their first year down in Florida.
Oh, cool.
Playing lacrosse. And then he, you know, obviously a heavy association with the Jacksonville program. But he asked me, what are you most excited about this year for college lacrosse? You know, pretty broad question.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think to mention about being my son is playing college lacrosse.
Yeah.
And he, I caught myself toward the end of the show when I was like, yeah, and my son, Matt, is a freshman at Loyola University in Maryland. And Ray was like, yeah, so now you're a LAX dad in college.
You've always been a LAX dad, but now you're a college lacrosse dad.
Yeah.
So and
that hit different. That did hit different to hear those words.
Soon your wife's going to be organizing pregame and postgame tailgate parties for parents.
We're already responsible for the fruit portion. First, the season opener against the University of Maryland. We are responsible for bringing 65 pieces of fruit.
So go for blueberries. They're easily knock out 65 in like a tiny little container.
I love kidding. Blueberries. Love it. But that's messy. That can get like bananas. So, I think
65. Why did they organize? Like, you know, I mean, you want like oranges. Like
this is the post game. This is
for the players. I know it's for the post game, but
it's for the players, staff. That, you know,
so are other people bringing fruit? Is this going to be combined into a fruit salad? or
no. So the way it's broken down is, like, you know, someone's in charge of like the main, you know, whether it's sandwiches or whatever. Then you have like chips, then you have water, then you have Gatorades. Fruit is what the Dixons signed up for.
What about tomatoes? Really surprised some people.
But that's, I mean, that's the argument. Then you're going to have the argument of, is tomato a vegetable or a fruit? And people may get upset and not want it.
Pineapple.
Who wants to eat a tomato? Like, stop it.
Who's bring 65 pineapples.
Yeah, great. You know, but back to the blueberry. I love blueberries. And my son, Owen, is a gigantic fruit guy. You know, smoothies and this and that. He hates blueberries. How can, do you know anyone that doesn't like blueberries?
No. Owen Dixon.
Yeah, he doesn't like blueberries.
That's like the first thing, like, my children are younger than yours, and they, that was like the first fruit that they really, that and strawberries, like cut up strawberries. And I guess
strawberries and
green,
apples.
Green grapes too. Oh, my kids eat apples.
Yeah.
Almost every day. They'll eat, like, you slice up an apple and then give it to them, and they'll eat it every day. Yeah, on the fruit hierarchy, I don't know what you're going to bring. I think your best bet's bananas or oranges.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody listen, knows what I don't to think do.
It's like a substantial, like, amount for a single person. You know, I think that's right.
Let's be honest. Mark apples, Dixon maybe. Is not going to have a whole lot of say in what fruit is being brought. So
I want to know how this continues.
Okay. Season. I'll let you know what I let
it's
you know.
It's fascinating to me that you are on the fruit duty. I guess that's a freshman parent thing. And as you get to be a senior, you're involved in like meats and sandwiches and stuff.
I'm not sure how I think for the most part of the way Loyola does it is the junior moms are mostly in charge of things.
Yeah.
But everybody pitches in. I mean, when you look, it was a sign up genius. And when you look at the sign up genius, it's, you know, senior parents, sophomore parents, freshmen, you know, it's kind of a mixture.
Very organized though. I appreciate that level of event organization. So Dix, there's two kind of, in my mind, prevailing themes as we enter the college lacrosse season. First is that everyone is playing this year. The Ivy League is participating really for the first time in 2 years. And that's super exciting for a lot of reasons and great for the kids and families and coaches and everyone involved, alumni of those programs, that everyone should be back on the field this year. And then the second thing is that a lot of people are coming back this year. And in the early weeks of the lacrosse season, it might be difficult for your average lacrosse fan to keep up with who's who and who entered the portal and transferred where grad students are playing. But there's some guys, because of the extra year of COVID, that are old. There's some grown men playing, and there were last year too. I mean, we talked about that a lot. There were some pros playing college lacrosse last year. Like your son, Matt, there's some guys at Loyola who are on like their sixth year, right? Like he was in seventh. Mm-hmm. Your son was in seventh grade when some of those guys started college. Think about that. Seventh grader when some of those guys started college.
It's wild perspective, but you're dead on. And there are a lot of you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's a lot of old guys still playing college lacrosse. And you know, again, having my younger son go through the recruiting process, that is a question that you ask. You know, what is your stance on transfers? What is your philosophy on, you know, blah blah blah. But the common theme with every discussion that he had was, you know, this thing will probably level out when you're a freshman in college. So Owen is a 2023. He'll graduate high school in 2023. So the, you know, maybe that 2024 season is where we're looking at maybe things starting to level out. All those fifth years have kind of gone through but who knows? Who knows? It's definitely changed the landscape of college lacrosse, college athletics, really.
Oh, for sure.
College across, you know, in our world. I mean, breaking news, first Big Ten game of the year will be Loyola at Maryland, February 12th.
That's cool.
So you think about the Maryland Terrapins in particular. I mean, two of their better players coming into the preseason, Keegan Kahn, a transfer from Villanova, and Jonathan Donville, a transfer from Cornell. that are going to fit right in to, you know, seemingly the offense and the lineup at Maryland.
Yeah, and add pieces that they may have graduated or are missing. So, so this is a good way segue into talking about the teams and the season. The All-American team came out a couple of weeks ago, preseason All-American team on Inside Lacrosse. And there are a bunch of guys who are back. A Chris Gray, first team preseason All-American attackman from North Carolina. We know his story. He transferred from Boston University a couple of years ago. He seems like this kid has been playing college lacrosse forever. And there's a few of those other guys. Like Ryan McNulty at Loyola.
Yeah.
He's been playing. Roman Puglisi from Maryland. We just keep seeing these names over and over again, you know. And they deserve the credit. But this is what I'm talking about. For lacrosse fans, you're like, oh, that guy's there. Or the guys who like Donville or Khan, who have transferred and now wearing a different uniform, playing at a different school. But we'll figure this out, and it's going to be fun to do. For sure.
Filling out my All-American lists, I had to go back like two or three times because I included guys that I thought were back that are not.
Yeah.
And then I left off guys that I thought were done but are back. So to your point, it's very confusing. And listen, last year, broadcasting these games, you know, Joe B and I, you know, is he a senior? Is he a junior? Like at some point you're just like, cause you know, normally, you know, Dan Flynn, the junior midfielder out of Tower Hill in Delaware, you kind of throw that class out cause you're like, okay, are we in the national championship game? I think I may have shared the story, you know, with Dave. I did the games on Westwood One Radio with Dave Ryan. You know, Rhino and I before the game were like, is Jared Bernhardt, is this truly his last game for Maryland?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because
that angle, yeah.
Yeah. We think, and it was, but he could have come. Who knows?
I know your one of your best friends, Craig Ronald, is a Virginia guy. And I've always thought it kind of pretentious that they're like do that first year, second year thing instead of freshman, sophomore. But I think maybe that's the way we should talk about everybody, like because we don't know whether a guy's a senior or not, but we know how many years of college lacrosse they've played. So we can be like, this guy's a third year or this guy's in a fifth year. Maybe that's the way we should talk about guys this season instead of trying to classify by the traditional a junior midfielder type of thing.
Even the red shirt thing can be confusing. You know, a red shirt freshman, a red shirt junior, okay, when did the red shirt happen? A good point. But I think it could become maybe embarrassing for some, you know, if it's like, this is an eighth year. I know that.
I don't know if that's possible. Who knows?
Yeah.
So our top 20 came out maybe last week on Inside Lacrosse. And the Virginia Cavaliers still... two-time reigning champs came in at number one. They are loaded again. The Terps, as you mentioned, number two, Duke number three, Georgetown number four, Notre Dame number five, North Carolina number six. A lot of the ACC at the top of that list. Georgetown is a team that I want to give a little notice to. On the defensive end, they're loaded.
Yeah.
Loaded. The transfer of Will Bowen from North Carolina, bringing back Gibson Smith, and their outstanding goalie.
And Zach Geddes is a tremendous short stick committee.
Yeah, so they're going to be the class of the Big East, it looks like, to start the season. But they're not going to sneak up on anybody at all this year. And they have an incredible non-conference schedule.
But notice how you just characterized that. You said, so it looks like Georgetown will be the class of the Big East to start the season. I think, you know, because of Denver, they have the national championship in 2015, always a talented team. And Bill Tierney and Matt Brown do such a wonderful job of coaching that team. Georgetown's won the last three Big East championships. And so I think but every year it's a little – you know, Denver always seems to be ranked higher than the Hoyas. And that's not the case in 2022. So I think a big question there is how does Georgetown handle, you know, to your point, what number four in the polls, first team all of what, Will Bowen. I know I put Gibson. I've always been a big Gibson Smith.
Owen McElroy is his first team.
Graham Bundy. You lose Caraway, but that's four potential first team All Americans right there.
And Geddes.
With those four guys. And Geddes is a contender as well. So this is a team that's very, very is poised to have a great year.
Yeah. Any when you look at that top 20, anyone seemed ranked higher or lower than you might expect?
You could say that every year when you look at it.
Yeah, of course.
I think when you talk about like ranked too high, ranked too low. I mean, look, some people are saying, "What's up with like Georgetown? Really four?" These guys are in like ACC kind of air.
I mean, but we just talked about the talent level that they
exactly.
Have
so, but you know, Georgetown the last couple of years, the success that they've had, they've always been in that lower half of the top 20, if ranked at all. So I think, you know, people are having questions on that. I know a lot of people are questioning Syracuse being ranked in the bottom portion of the top 20. I think I had them maybe 13th or 14th. But I think that a lot of people think that the Orange are going to be much better than they were last year simply because they have Gary Gate coaching them and Dave Petromala. And that might work out that way, but those two guys aren't playing. You know, it's the guys that are back. And so a lot of people thought that Syracuse potentially was a little ranked a little bit too low. There are a number of people that are very high on the SoCon. So people thought that maybe High Point and or Richmond should have been ranked or ranked higher. I don't have the top 20 in front of me, so I can't remember where they placed.
If you count receiving votes in that order, High Point is 24th and Richmond would be 27th.
When you look at the Patriot League, you know, you got Lehigh, Loyola, Army, all bunched pretty close together. Loyola, I think, is the highest ranked of them all at eight. There's a lot
Army,
of people talking
10.
About
yeah. Lehigh 14. I think Lehigh is going to be really good this year.
People are saying Lehigh might be ranked a little bit too low. And then Navy is a team that has a lot of people excited that they might be able to not only crack the top 20, but maybe get into that, you know, top 10 at some point.
If you follow recruiting, Navy has had some very good classes of recruits over the last several years. And at some point, those guys are now on the field and we should see some. They're going to be exciting to watch.
Right. So I think there's a lot of really exciting, compelling storylines to start the season, but nothing beats the live action and the actual competition. So we'll see how everything shakes out.
So you spoke about competition a little bit, Dix. The guest this week is Brian Abbott, who is a veteran lacrosse official and has joined us to talk about the change in the shot clock, some other officiating odds and ends and rule clarifications, as well as talking about the future of the sport as it relates to officiating. And let's bring Brian in for that conversation. Joining us this week as we get ready for the season is veteran lacrosse official Brian Abbott, the president of NILOA, the National Intercollegiate Lacrosse Officials Association. Brian, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Brian, it's great to have you with us to kick off the 2022 season. I guess the first question, a very general question, what is NILOA and what exactly does it do?
We're a national organization and we handle services for all colleges, whether it be NCAA or MCLA, you name it. We prepare officials. We train around the country, recruit, and try to provide a streamlined service to have our officials prepared. And I enjoy that aspect so much as an educator to be able to grow the depth of talent across the country and hold training events on the West Coast, Midwest, you name it, we're there. If there's something to be done, we want to be a part of it to grow this great game.
When you talk about training, is that segmented into different parts of the year? Like right now, we're talking late January. We're right on the doorstep of the new season. What does the training look like now versus maybe something in the summer, something in the fall?
Yes. So during the season, we train one of two ways. Like last night, we did a webinar and our focus was face-offs. And then we post that. That was our third webinar so far this year. And, you know, we have over 900 folks view that out of our membership. So it's pretty outstanding, and it builds that consistency. The other component that happens is our observation program, where our assigners and some other folks go out and observe our officials, give them verbal and written feedback to improve their game, and hopefully down the line impact their schedule in a positive direction.
So we've been talking about this a little bit. I want to get into the specifics a little bit more, but like, as the college game continues to grow, you need more college-ready, college-level officials. So what are some of the things that NILO does to, like, advance people through that funnel, like up, you know, take a guy who's a high school ref and get him into and college-level Division III types and all the way up to, you know, top D1 officials? What's that process like, and what are some of the things that NILO does to encourage and cultivate those guys?
So folks can go to NILOA.net and actually apply to be an official. The best route is through their high school assigner as well. I mean, lacrosse is so unique. We have D1 officials that also officiate high school. So our D1 guys, D2 guys, veteran guys get to see these young up and coming guys. And then we encourage them to go to tryout events that we have during the summer and fall, where they'll be seen and evaluated, hopefully promoted, if not, be given good feedback and ask them to come back the following year. So we really try to cut through any kind of red tape. And the bottom line is, if you're eager and you're willing to show up for a training event, you have an opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those officials, a member of NILOA. And Brian, I've reffed your games when you were coaching middle school teams. We've reffed together at the Division III level, at the Division I level. How have you seen officiating change and evolve over your course of being a lacrosse official? And maybe that could have been a good question. Where did you start? And obviously people see you now on championship weekend quite a bit. And you've ref at the professional level as well. What has your journey been like?
For me, I was fortunate to, I was teaching and playing club ball, and I had some fellow teachers say, "Why don't you referee?" Because I had never given it a second thought. So I was kind of recruited to come in. And whenever someone recruits you, you feel good about yourself. So I gave it a shot. And I was very fortunate to have great mentors in the Baltimore area, get into the college game early, and actually do pro indoor early. And that foundation from my mentors has been extraordinary. And it's one of the things I preach is leave it as you found it or better, and also recruit and train your replacement. The game itself has evolved a lot, and it's for the good. I mean, the growth of the sport, there's a lot of finances behind the sport now. So there's a lot at risk. So being a professional and working your tail off and being prepared and understand that, you know, whether it's JUCO, you know, D1, they're all the same. Every game's a championship game to those students and to the coaches. So it's about giving them the best professional effort that you can.
You mentioned some mentors who have helped you along the way. Who were some of those guys?
Ted Skokas, Butch West, Rich Tamburino, Tom Young. I mean, there's so many guys that I can't, it's unbelievable. You know, Al Sadler brought me into the MLL as a young official and believed in me. So, you know, being able to referee with so many different guys around the country, and that's what I love so much. That's why I love it when I have an opportunity to travel and work with guys in different areas, because it is such a brotherhood. And one of the most important things is to get on the phone or on a Zoom prior to a game, build that relationship of the crew. You know, go out for a meal after the game. Just don't run away. You know, spend some time. And I don't care if it's a rec league game. Enjoy that brotherhood, because it's special. And you know, if it goes away, you're going to miss it.
Man, Ted Skokas, you just stoked a lot of memories for me, Brian. He's somebody I work with a lot in my younger years as a high school official. He taught me quite a bit. And Rich Tamburino was my mentor, who got me on the track in Nailoa. So some great names that you just mentioned. The evolution of the game means evolution of your relationship with college coaches and the rules committee in particular. What role does Nailoa play in the rule cycles and even non-rule cycles with the rules committee?
I'm very fortunate to be the active official that sits in on those meetings. And I give the coaches in that committee an amazing amount of credit because they'll be like, "BA, what do you think about this? Can your guys officiate this situation in training?" So they're always asking. So my role is to give input and say what I feel we can do well and what might be a struggle. And again, I applaud every member that's been on that committee and the time that I've been on there and the amount of time that they put in to grow this game. They utilize the surveys very well and crunch data. And what I really like is they're not just looking through their coach's lens. They're looking out for the good of the game and to set a high standard. And the hope is the work that they put in, that every year we get to a point where there's fewer and fewer rule changes. So again, hats off to the committee.
So that's a good segue into new rules for 2022 in the college game. Obviously the shot clock is the biggest. Can you explain what the new rule is, how it works, and why it was changed?
So the 60-80, it's technically not a rule change year, but because of COVID, there were some things that didn't happen on the front end like would normally happen, having required clocks for everyone, two clocks and all of those standards. But essentially, when you have a change of possession, it'll be an 80-second clock. When the ball, again, I'll keep it simple, when the ball's on the offensive end and we've had a shot that hits the post or goalie, it will reset to 60 seconds. So that pretty much keeps it there. We had the same thing. If we have a play on, we reset the clock right where it is. So if it's at 75, it's going to go to 80. If it's at 55, it's going to go to 60. All right, we're not going to bump up to 80 again. If we have a flag down, when that play ends, where that clock is will determine what the clock is set at. So if it's at 75 when we kill the play, it'll be at 80. Same thing, if it's at 55, it'll be at 60. So in the scrimmages I've done, it's been a seamless transition. But sometimes you might see a shot taken with 72 seconds and it resets to 60. Very similar to what's done in college hoops.
The other big rule, and it's not really a rule change, but one that continues to get more and more scrutiny, more and more refinement, is the goal mouth. We had a presentation last week. That was our webinar. That was the topic with Nailoa, was the goal mouth. What can you tell us about that goal mouth?
So you see that goal mouth, essentially it's a no-fly zone. Before, during, or after the play, if the offensive player ends up in there, it will be no goal. And then we will adjudicate, how did he get in there? Did he put himself in there? Was there contact with the goalie? Hence, the offense owns that, all right? The crease area outside of the goal mouth is safe for them to land in if the ball crosses the plane, you know, before he touches down. The other thing that we look at is if he ends up in the goal mouth, did the defender put him in there? And then what did that contact look like? So we evaluate it. I appreciate the fact of knowing if he's in there, it's no goal, and then we can manage the rest. It's been an evolution of this. The committee wants to allow that athleticism, but they want them going away from the goal to have players be as safe as possible, but also enjoy the excitement of that play. And I think the committee's done a good job of making it a little easier for officials to adjudicate.
And when you say end up in the goal mouth, it could be from a dive. It could be from a player shooting and scoring and then walking through the goal mouth. In all those cases, goals disallowed.
Yes. So the onus is on the offense to take a good path. If he doesn't take a good path, he's in jeopardy of not having a goal. And then if that path takes him into the goalie, there's potential for him to have a time-serving foul.
And that is landing in the goal mouth. Can you somehow pass through the air over it? Or is it completely no-fly zone? Or is it you have to touch inside?
You have to touch. So it's the cylinder does not go up. It is flat. And if you touch that, and it can be your glove. So you have to stay out of there before, during, and after the play.
Now, remember, though, flying through, you got a goalie in there. And if you make contact with the goalie, that is a huge no-no, right?
Yes. Well, any contact with the goalie before the ball crosses, automatically no goal. All right. And then we look at the contact. You know, is the goalie coming out to initiate the contact? Those things. Is the contact below the waist of the goalie? And you have to factor in all those things. And it's never as clean as you'd like it to be. But the good thing is we have nice athletic players. And as the season progressed last year, you know, they're coaching it. Because back when we used to dive, these young men weren't alive. So it's not like they practice it growing up through club ball and everything else. They're just learning how to do it themselves.
One of the complaints, if you will, are high hits. And most of the complaints come on like social media with, oh, the game's gotten soft. It's not tough anymore. But in my opinion, before the dive came back, you know, before shot clocks, before this, that, and the other thing, high hits were the hardest thing to adjudicate. And the rules committee, as well as Nailoa, made it real simple. If you think it's 50-50, you take it. You know, you take it for a penalty. Amongst referees, amongst the coaches that you work with, what's the sentiment of where the physicality of the game is right now?
I think it's in a really good spot. I think teams understand what's going to be called. You know, if you have a lot of penalties in a game, it's going to be difficult to win. Especially if you have a full-time foul with a shot to the head, depending on what that shot's like, it could be an ejection. And the biggest thing is that you have to look at how that defenseman, middie or tackman, who, whatever the player is, how is he making contact? If he's leaving his feet, is he using his hands and his elbows? And one thing I've noticed lately, coaches are doing a great job. You got these big defensemen, but they're pulling up. You know, because the offensive player may be shorter and they can't get down to hit him in the chest. They're pulling up, standing tall, the guy's running into him, and they're making an effective slide without hitting him in the head. So again, there's no part in our game for headshots and guys going after people. And I think at all levels, we're doing a really good job of taking care of that.
From a rules perspective, Brian, face-offs is something that seemingly is consistently tweaked by the rules committee. With respect to being a referee, what's your message to face-off guys to stay out of trouble?
Well, one of the biggest things is play the ball. If you're playing the ball, you're not going to hold. You're getting play and you're getting it out of there. I don't think we could be in a better place from an official standpoint when it comes to the face-off. Our mechanics are super. The tip, the stop, centering up on the ball allows for a 50-50 play. We have two officials there rolling through. We have a pause before we blow the whistle. So if a guy rolls, we're going to see it. And last year with the adjustments, it was the best year facing off in my career. And I hope we keep on that path because the face-off is an excellent part of our game. But as an official, we have to make them do it right. I have control items in a game, and number one's the face-off. If we do that well, that's 80% of the complaining. And if you have that going, now you got the coaches and players on your side, because it's not about us, but our job is to make it fair.
Well, Brian, we really appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Best of luck to you this season, and keep them safe and having fun.
It's fun. Look forward to getting out there and having a great season for everybody. Good luck to everyone.
Thanks, Brian.
So you've worked with Brian for years on the field and called a lot of games that he's called. And officiating is so – it's so – I mean, you are an official, so I don't want to state the obvious or blow smoke up. But, like, it's such a crucial part of every single game, yet it is a thankless job for the most part. And it's like any sport, the – best officials, you don't know who they are and don't notice them.
You make some great points. So, especially in my younger years when I would be reffing youth lacrosse, high school lacrosse, you know, in college, you got to get to a venue. You'd like to get there about 2 hours ahead of time, hour and a half ahead of time. You have to be on the field meeting with the coaches 30 minutes prior to face-off. But, you know, look, we have jobs and family responsibilities. So sometimes you're like hustling to get to a high school game on time. And the one thing that I think it was Tommy Young told me at one point, Rich Tamburino, was like, listen, don't ever, you know, risk your safety or other safeties rushing to a game, because remember one thing, the game can't start without you. And to your point, the game needs officials. You have to have officials there to have a game. So that's a great point that you make. And also along the lines of, yeah, you're right. Like, the best officials don't make the game about them. They don't insert themselves into a game. And I've seen people at the highest level do that. And it really is a bad look. Now that doesn't mean, look, if it's there, you call it. I tell you, it can be really uncomfortable when you just start a game and you've got a slash or you've got a push, and maybe, you know, maybe you're like, damn, it's maybe that's 50-50, but you throw it. And like right off the bat, you know, you've set the tone for that game. And you might not have another foul for 2.5 quarters, but you got that one early out of the gate. Or you may have a situation where two teams just can't wait to get at each other and they're acting up and you've got to get control of the game. And you may have 6 flags in the first quarter and then none the rest of the game. So yeah. It's sometimes you're more noticed than others, but the best officials, even when they're noticed, they're doing their job and they're doing it very, very well.
All right, Dix, it's time to get to the game previews this weekend. Some are calling, the Inside Lacrosse guys are calling this week 0 of the college lacrosse season. Not everybody's in action yet. It's still early February, but there's a great slate of real live counted games that involve some top 20 teams and just some interesting matchups. So really the action starts on Friday afternoon, when Robert Morris visits Durham to take on the number 3 ranked Duke Blue Devils at 5 p.m.
So right off the bat, Duke, even though they made the national semifinals a year ago, a lot of people feel like they underachieved and never really truly gelled as a team. Michael Sowers, Mike Adler between the pipes, but, you know, again, high expectations for the Blue Devils in an always stacked ACC. Virginia's looked terrific in scrimmages from the intel that I've received. Notre Dame is back with a very sturdy lineup. Syracuse, we mentioned the new coaches. And in North Carolina, I had the opportunity to watch them play Navy in a scrimmage. And even though they've got to replace 5 of their top 6 middies, they got some really, really good freshmen. And they have Chris Gray. So this is a Duke team that's doing a double dip this weekend. Against a Robert Morris Colonial team that has a new coach in Craig McDonald. He comes in over from UMass and takes over this Robert Morris program that has had good success over the last few years. And Bobby Moe is in a conference this year, the Atlantic Sun. So they'll be in there with the likes of Detroit Mercy, Utah, Bellarmine, Air Force. I think Cleveland State rounds out that slate. And how about when they play Utah on April the 16th? That's going to be former coach McMinn going against his old program, Robert Morris. But good way to kick off the season. Robert Morris is always long, especially on the defensive end. We'll see what the 2022 version looks like. And I think for Duke, everybody's looking for a meteoric step from freshman to sophomore year out of Brennan O'Neill, the talented attackman who has been terrific so far on the social media clips that we've seen from Duke's practices, but he is a legit talent.
Saturday has a nice schedule of games as well. A lot of them kick off around noon. And the first one I want to ask you about is High Point is traveling to College Park to take on the number 2 ranked Maryland Terrapins in the post Jared Bernhardt era. That game's at 8.
That, I think that's the number 1 thing that the Maryland faithful are looking at, who replaces JB1. And Logan Wisnowskis will wear the number 1. He's the leader of that team, but a lot of parts coming back. Makar on the defensive end, McNaney between the pipes. You've got Kyle Long, DeMeo.
Puglisi. You've talked about the grad transfers.
Eric Maliver, I think. Eric Maliver is I think, the next big thing on attack for the Maryland Terrapins. And they take on a High Point team that returns Asher Nolte. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's been playing forever, seemingly, you know, Asher Nolte. And this is a Panther team that I think is poised to challenge for that SoCon championship and a return to the NCAA tournament. You know, last year, the COVID year, they ended up playing Carolina, it seemed like, half a dozen times. The Tar Heels are on the Panthers' schedule. But this is a – I mean, this is a High Point team that always plays very, very hard and very tough. So this is a good opener for both squads and a real test for the Maryland Terrapins.
Before we leave this, I want to wrap up, put a button on the Jared Bernhardt conversation and congratulate him on just an outstanding football season. Just outstanding. I got to watch him play. I followed his season and his stats throughout the entire fall, but watching him play in the national championship game was just, he looked like, you know, when you see those highlight films, like I love going back and watching, like, you know, Lamar Jackson when he was in high school.
Barry Sanders.
Yeah. Like just those, you know, when they're playing, like LaDainian Tomlinson is a guy I remember watching his like high school, like YouTube video, like his highlight film. Like, and you're just like,
I know where you're going with this.
Like you can't tackle this guy. He's just,
it's a man against, it's like a man against boys.
Right. And that's what Jared looked like playing football for the first time in 5 years against, you know, the other team in the national championship game. He suffered an ankle sprain that really hampered his playing time in that game, but he still came back. But like the first play of the game, he runs 56 yards and it's like, he can't tackle him. And then he missed out on some of the big Division II awards because he missed 4 games during the regular season.
Oh, did he miss? I didn't know he missed.
Yeah, missed some time. So like his stats, while they were like on a per game basis, unbelievable.
Right.
They cumulative, they weren't the same. And I think like a guy who lost in like the semifinals is like the first team All-American quarterback. I think he was honorable mention or something like that because they just couldn't not put him on the teams. But congratulations on a great season. And I fully expect him to be like the next Wes Welker, Julian Edelman playing for Bill Belichick.
Danny Amendola.
Yeah, in the slot. I totally expect him to be on the New England Patriots next fall.
Well, if any team is smart, they'll snatch him up and do an a la Belichick, you know, move. Just get an athlete that can be versatile outside in a formation.
Another noon start on Saturday. The aforementioned Jacksonville Dolphins will come to Homewood Field to take on the number 19 ranked Johns Hopkins Blue Jays in the start of the second year of the Peter Milliman era at JHC.
It'll be interesting because, as we have talked about in this space and in other outlets, you know, John Galloway was very well thought of during the interview process.
That's true.
He did very, very well over Zoom and really had the Hopkins leadership intrigued in a job that eventually went to, you know, the man he's facing on Saturday, Peter Milliman and Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. You know, Jacksonville, to me, like, when are they going to take the next step in the SoCon? You know, that conference really has belonged to High Point and Richmond. And then Air Force, as a third team, has made the NCAA tournament over the last 5-6 years. You know, Air Force is gone to the Atlantic Sun. You know, when is Jacksonville going to make that next step? When are they going to be real? You know, they made the SoCon tournament last year, but when are they going to take that next step and really challenge for an NCAA tournament berth? Huge test at Homewood Field. You know, Hopkins, a team, disappointing season a year ago, but ended on a high note, if you will, making it to the Big Ten championship game. Will that team develop? Will they take the next step? And I think Saturday's a good test for them in the Baltimore area. I think all fans are allowed, right? So that'll be good to have fans back at Homewood in mass.
My big question mark for Hopkins this year is, will Connor Delaney come out and play lacrosse after he's done with his basketball season? The Jays are a top 20 type of team, challenging for an NCAA berth and national championship. He's a first team All-American point guard, back for his, I guess, his fourth year of basketball, but, you know, he's a grad student or fifth year at Hopkins.
And when he's done playing hoops, is he going to transition to the lacrosse field like he did a year ago and play long stick midfield? That's what I'm watching this season for the Blue Jays.
Seems like Delaney's tearing it up. You know, I get social media hits for Johns Hopkins basketball scores. Jared Fernandez, from all, everything I've heard, is back. Well, you know, he was a transfer from Syracuse that was injured last year. He's back. Brett Martin is somebody I'm keeping my eye on. I think he's a terrific short stick D middy. I think he emerged as our number one short stick D middy last year in an area where I think they struggled. And when you look at the Big Ten, you know, Maryland is still Maryland. They're the king of the hill. Rutgers, you know, we talk about transfers. You know, Rutgers has a number of transfers coming back up to Piscataway to help out the Scarlet Knights. And Colin Kearse is back between the pipes, one of the better goaltenders in the country. Michigan, can they take the next step? You know, they beat Ohio State twice last year, including in the Big Ten tournament. All six teams, again, will make the Big Ten tournament in 2022. And then you have Penn State and Ohio State kind of regrouping, you know, post Mac O'Keefe, Grant Ament, that pair is officially gone. And then Ohio State hasn't made the NCAA tournament since 2017 when they made the national championship game. So, you know, a lot of questions in the Big Ten that I think are going to answer, obviously, as the season unfolds. But Hopkins, the other big question mark for me, Dan, who's going to start goal for Johns Hopkins? Will it be Josh Kearson? Will it be Marcille, who ended the year strong last year? Or will it be a freshman, Jack Webb, who's played incredibly well out of Loyola Blakefield? And then you have Gibb Versfeld, 6'7", I think, transfer from D3, that I think from all reports has had a good preseason, had a nice scrimmage against Denver. So who's going to start in goal for Johns Hopkins?
A lot of options there.
So we both have a lot of questions.
We'll find out Saturday at noon, Homewood Field, when the Jays take on the Dolphins.
Okay. And I have to imagine that game is going to be televised / streamed some way, somehow, right? I mean, the ESPN deal is still in place. So as we're recording this, we haven't seen the ESPN broadcast schedule, but we have to assume that it's going to be streamed in some capacity.
Yeah, at least through Hopkins TV. I would say most of these games are available on some type of streaming platform, either through the school's websites or ESPN3. We'll have, like
the BTN Plus will probably
have the BTN Plus will have, we'll be airing the game. So you should be able to watch, fans should be able to find their favorite teams.
I just realized we're ripping through these games and really haven't mentioned any potential viewing options.
Yeah. So just to be clear, though, no games will be on broadcast TV that we know of, but you should be able to stream your favorite team's games. Okay, Dix, let's keep going. There's a couple 1 o'clock games that I find intriguing. First is Air Force, you talked about a little bit. In a new league this year, we'll go to Charlottesville to take on the top-ranked Virginia Cavaliers, who just seem to just keep reloading. That game's
every year I come into the preseason not knowing a whole lot about Air Force, but they always play good lacrosse. And they had a good scrimmage against Notre Dame recently. And Virginia, all reports are, I mean, they are loaded and they are playing at a very high level in very cold temperatures. The reports I've heard, the defense is still gigantic, even with the graduations of Kyle Kaloji and Jared Connors at the long stick midfield position. Schellenberger and Moore are just picked up right where they left off on Championship Monday last year in up in Hartford. New goalie will be there. Everybody thinks it's Nunes. Is it Nunes or Nunes? How do you say that name?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. But anyway, all signs are pointing to him potentially being the starter after the graduation of Alex Rode. Virginia's looking really good in preseason.
And Dix, another game that I'm interested in at 1 o'clock is Providence taking on Holy Cross, which will be, I think, one of the more balanced and competitive games of this weekend.
Yeah, so second-year coach J.L. Reppert for the Crusaders. That game might be indoors, because I remember we had J.L. on the podcast last year. You talk about a new indoor facility.
New facility. I think they could play inside.
I just can't remember if it was, you know, game-ready, NCAA-ready, you know, all that good stuff. But, Providence is a team in the Big East that is always a thorn in the side of the, you know, the Denvers and the Georgetowns. And I guess according to Inside Lacrosse, they've got a handful of top 100 incoming freshmen. So a nice recruiting class put together by Chris Gabrielli. Holy Cross in the Patriot League, they're trying to, you know, build that back up. When you talk about the Patriot, obviously Loyola is the highest ranked, returning a ton of guys. You know, you mentioned Ryan McNulty, Sam Schaefer between the pipes, Kevin Lindley, Aiden Olmstead in the on the attack. Evan James at midfield is a all Patriot preseason pick. Cam Wires defensively. Loyola is a very experienced team. Army, Brendan Nickturn is the offensive preseason player of the year. Marcus Hudgens is the defensive preseason player of the year in the Patriot League. So high hopes in West Point. And then Lehigh. I had an opportunity to officiate their fall game with Drexel, and they are good. They are a very talented team. Mike Sisselberger at the faceoff is an absolute unit. Guy is gigantic. It was funny. I was doing the game, and I go out there to do the faceoff, and I'm like, you know, I just benched 150 pounds this week, but I did it 10 times. Sisselberger's just like, wow, good for you. I think I wake up with 150 pound vest on, you know, so good guy. It was fun to interact with him and watch that Lehigh team play, you know, and then you have teams like BU who are very talented and well-coached. So this is going to be a really interesting Patriot League race. And we get a peek at one of the Patriot League teams with Holy Cross opening up this weekend.
And our final game on Saturday that I want to talk about, Dix, is the number 12 Denver Pioneers travel to Utah, who's under new management this season. And that game's at 3:00 East Coast time.
And Denver's a team. I think I've watched some of the preseason interviews with Bill Tierney, who says we've got some guys coming back, and if they play to their capabilities, then we're going to be pretty good. We also have a lot of young guys. So we could either be in a position of really just kind of managing, or we're going to be doing a lot of teaching, you know, depending upon how those young players respond. We've already talked a little bit about the Big East with always been kind of that two horse race the last few years with Denver and Georgetown. We mentioned Providence. How will the Big East shake out? Villanova's a team. It's always on the fringe and always is very competitive. And then Utah, member of the Atlantic Sun, they found a home, new coach in McMinn. And he's had tremendous success at Robert Morris, making them a really competitive program, going to the NCAA tournament. How will their philosophy, how are their paradigm shift, you know, from Coach Holman and his staff now that you have Coach McMinn in charge? So that'll be a really intriguing game.
That completes it. As we said, look up on your team's website. I'm sure they will have all the information for viewing these games, and please enjoy them. Dix, it's time for our first give and go of the season.
I didn't know if we were going to do one in week zero.
For our new fans, this is something we do every week. It allows me and Dixie to talk about just about anything we want. I often don't tell him what the topic is. He's good on his feet. And I just drop a question on him. I kind of give him my top answers and then give him a chance to sort of rebut or agree. So, Dix, the Olympics are starting. Winter Games are starting. And I know what you're thinking right now. You're probably thinking, like, what are your favorite events? That's not where I'm going with this. We might save that.
Actually, my first thought was, who cares? But go ahead.
No, so it made me think, like, what are some of the other great international sporting events that you like to watch? You know, in the United States, we're so centered on, like, the NFL. And by the way, the NFL games, the last playoff games, the last couple of weeks have been absolutely just incredible.
T's and P's to Buffalo Bill fans everywhere. Yeah. Oh, boy.
And then there's, hoops and baseball, lacrosse, and hockey, you know, like our major sports that we really follow. But, you know, internationally, that's not what other countries follow the most, you know. So what are some of your top, maybe quarter, you know, I don't know, what do you call a every 4 years type of
event like the Olympics. What do you call that? Like a quarterly?
Quadrennial.
Quadrennial? I don't know.
I don't know.
You might be right. Type of event. So I made a list. I have them written down here. I love the Olympics. I like the spirit of them. It's changed, obviously, over the course of our lifetimes, where it was all amateur athletes competing for their countries to, you know, letting pros play. But the Winter Olympics, there aren't really, besides hockey, are there a lot of pros that are participating in anything? Not really.
I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. I don't think there's any. Figure skaters might as well be professional.
Yeah, and skiers and snowboard, like there are competitions where you can earn money and fame, but really the Winter Olympics are the top, the highest level of that. Whereas the Summer Games, think about basketball or soccer or a lot of the other stuff that you see. It's professional athletes playing.
Right.
Just representing the country. The Winter Olympics is a little bit more pure than that. So I made a list. I certainly like, some of the tennis and golf events. The Ryder Cup in golf is always fun to watch, the U.S. versus combination of the best players in the world playing against the U.S. players. In tennis, there's four major championships. Only one is in the United States. The Australian Open just occurred. I did watch the final of that, but Wimbledon is sort of my favorite, always has been like my favorite major in tennis. But I also, I'll watch, the World Cup or the Euros in soccer, always incredible drama in on the pitch during those times. The Tour de France, big fan of the Tour de France. And when we talk about international, I can't forget or leave out competitive eating. The International Federation of Competitive Eating, or Major League Eating, it brings people from all over the world.
Shout out Crazy Legs Conte.
Shout out Crazy Legs. I always enjoy, the Hot Dog Championship, which is in Coney Island every July 4th, that kind of stuff. But those are my top international events. I have, my buddy Brad is from Australia, and I will watch Aussie Rules Football Championships. But he's trying to get me in the cricket. I just can't watch cricket. That's just too much.
That's hard.
It's too much.
Hard. Yeah, I have flipped on cricket. I've tried to spend about 5 or 10 minutes with it. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But good list. Number one for me, World Cup soccer. That is, I played soccer in high school. My son Matt played. It's just awesome. And
great.
The U.S. when they're in the World Cup, they didn't qualify for the last one, and they're kind of in trouble right now after losing to Canada
2-0
recently. It's kind of wacky how soccer's become so, ODP of Olympic Development Team and academies and this and that. The soccer's just got regressed in this country versus progress. But I love the World Cup, the pageantry. And what other sporting event where there might be one goal scored in 90 minutes can kind of keep you on the edge of your seat? And also you got the daggone, all the flopping and the,
sure.
I was watching something on YouTube. It was like indoor soccer. Friday nights in Baltimore when I was growing up, if you went to a Blast game, that was it. That was a place to be. It would be 10,000-11,000 people in the Baltimore Civic Center. And these are guys smashing each other in the boards, kicking their legs, elbowing. There was no one flopping. Those dudes just got right back up. And now you got, you get breathed on in soccer, and the guys are going down like they just got shot by a sniper. So that's but just the competition, the conditioning, the skill, the pageantry, World Cup soccer has it for me. I also love the World Games and lacrosse. And I had the privilege of calling those games back in 2014 when they were in Denver. So, getting to know those athletes and then being up close and watching them play was really, really cool. One of my fondest memories growing up was when my dad took my brother and I to the 82 World Games at Johns Hopkins. That was when Brooke Sweet was the best and fairest in the world. And I remember being in Tent Village, and meeting Peter Kahn, the legendary attackman from Australia, Chris Kane, an amazing player for Team USA. And so that was like a great memory from when I was a kid, like Tent Village at Johns Hopkins, you know, Canada, Australia. That was when Australia made it to the gold medal game against the US. So that was really, really cool. I'm not a huge tennis fan. What else? Not really nothing else. I mean, I'm not a big race car fan. So like Formula One racing is more international, right? I do want to watch that Netflix show about the Formula One. I think there's a Netflix series or special that talks about Formula One, because that's fascinating, like how fast they go and how dangerous that is. And trying to think of other things. Tour de France, not a big cyclist guy. I mean, I think I was intrigued with the Tour de France when Lance Armstrong was in his heyday, you know, winning and seeing if he could win as an American and all that good stuff.
I like the scenery of the Tour de France. It's beautiful. It changes. It goes from the mountains. It goes to the different cities. And, you know, it's, you know, you can put it on in the background and just kind of, oh, look at that. Right. Look at that town that's 700 years old.
You know, you're watching these guys and you're like, how hard can it be to ride a bike? And then I get on my Peloton and I'm like, yeah, I'm sucking wind, you know, if the resistance gets up to 50, you know. So I'm like, yeah, this is a lot harder than I thought, you know. You know what else I do like? And I really have gotten into it the last couple of years, the Little League World Series. Oh. I do like the Little League World Series. I mean, I know the majority of the teams are American, and most of the like compelling matchups, now that they really broadcast that thing from start to finish. Like watching the regional games are pretty cool. Like watching Michigan play Iowa for the Midwest, whatever is kind of cool. But far and away, World Cup soccer and the World Games in lacrosse are my two favorite.
There you go. That's our first give and go of the season, Dix. I'm excited for the Olympics. Maybe after we get to watch a little bit of it, we can talk about our favorite events that we've been watching or the people who have made themselves household names in a couple of
weeks. Yeah, we will watch it. But, you know, nothing's going to be able to replicate the 1980 Miracle on Ice. You know, Mary Lou Retton. Even Michael Phelps, watching my kids watch Michael Phelps. Dorothy Hamill. What were the
Eric Heiden? Remember Eric Heiden,
the speed skater? Yeah.
And his sister, Beth Heiden.
Beth Heiden.
I can't believe I remember that. But man, Eric Heiden dominated the 1980 games. He won like 5 gold medals in speed skating.
And remember
Apollo Moses. Ono?
Edwin Moses for the track and field. Carl Lewis. Flojo from back in the day. I mean, I know the
Dave and Dan. Remember Dave and Dan?
Oh my God, the Reebok commercials.
Dave O'Brien and Dan
Johnson.
And one of them One of them didn't make it.
I know that marketing campaign went up in smoke. Whew. Remember, since you're a big figure skating guy, what was the pair? Ty Babyloni and. What's the other one?
I think his name was Randy something.
Torval and Dean. Was that one? Torval and Dean. Figure skating. I'm just going to say it right now. Figure skating sucks. I mean, I respect the athleticism and I appreciate, but like whenever anyone where you're judged get out of here. Yeah. Get out of here. And then you have a French judge. Forget it. Torval and Dean.
I think of a name. And I was like, Apollo Ono was a great
speed skater. Kaz Michael Michaels.
I remember like some of the downhill skiers like Franz Klammer
the mayor, Phil Mayer.
The mayor Bill brothers. Johnston? I think they were Bill brothers. Johnston?
Like
Phil and Bill.
Bill Johnson when he won the gold medal. I'm thinking that was like the 80s, early 90s.
And now we have the Flying Tomato. My kids know who Shaun White is.
This will be like his 5th or 6th Olympics, isn't it?
Yeah, he's been doing it for a long time. But my little kids are like, oh, it's the Flying Tomato. I'm like, how do you guys know him? Like, how do you? It must be in some game or something they play or something.
Yeah, maybe.
But I'm excited. I enjoy it. It's every 4 years, so it's not
right.
I will try to get my fill of it. And you know, It's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. It's in
third division. Oh my God, that Jim McKay, that ABC Wild World of Sports, that's still like
where the skier comes off the ski jumper comes off the side of the building.
Oh wow, that's
never forget that.
Oh. Where are the winter games being held, and are fans allowed to? Because the summer games were in Japan.
I think they're in Beijing.
There were no fans allowed.
I think it's in Beijing, and they are not allowed to. Well, I know it's in Beijing. All right. It sounds like a good place to stop. We would like to thank our guest this week, NILOA President Brian Abbott. What officials do, as we talked about, critical to continue to grow the game and also a basic essential for every game that's played. And a thankless job many of the time, but you can't play without officials. So we love what you do. Keep working on that, Brian, to continue to increase the pool of incredible officials. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We'll be here all season and it doesn't cost you anything. And if you are interested in advertising on our podcast or others at Inside Lacrosse, hit me up with a DM or an email. It's very affordable and we reach a wide swath of dedicated lacrosse fans several times a week. We also love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY at DFly. And remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.
All right, cool.